I think the sharing of the knowledge and then how you can use that knowledge not to represent it, but as part of your creative process. And I think that's what we are aiming, for example, in this residency. It's not about a representation of the science, but it's about how these concepts and this having a world image or an approach to a different reality, how you perceive the world can be used in your creative process to build something different.
Welcome to the latest podcast in our Arts Research Africa dialogue series. These dialogues are intended to stimulate practice, enable research, and inspire collective engagement around the question of artistic research in Africa. I'm Prof. Christa Doherty, Chair of Research in the Wits School of Arts. In this dialogue, I'll be speaking to Ale de la Puente, an independent artist researcher from Mexico who's doing a residency in Johannesburg as part of the Goethe Institute's Studio Quantum program. Ale has studied industrial design, goldsmithing, boat building, navigation, astronomy, physics, and philosophy. She is known for her poetic and conceptual explorations of time and space across a wide range of mediums, ranging from installations and sculptures to drawings, photography, and video, including art science expeditions in search of symbolic natural phenomena, how we signify them, and how, very importantly, we relate to the given meanings through art. Ale is a fellow of the National System of Arts Creators in Mexico. She's exhibited her work both nationally and a wide range of international galleries, from the Museum of Modern Art in Mexico to the Polytechnic Museum in Moscow and the Bass Museum of Art in Miami, Florida, to name but a few. Her work is part of leading public and private collections. Ale has developed art projects in collaboration with the Astronomy Institute and the Nuclear Science Institute of the National Autonomous University of Mexico, UNAM, the Schmidt Ocean Institute in California, the Roscosmos in Russia, and the Cosmica Institute in Berlin and Mexico City. She's collaborated with scientists to carry out several projects, among them matters of gravity and finding the center, which we will discuss in this podcast, as well as the project she's beginning in Johannesburg as part of the Goethe Institute's Studio Quantum Initiative, an international events and artist-in-residence program which is exploring emerging quantum technologies through the lens of art. In this podcast, we discuss how Ale came to art practice, beginning with her degree in industrial design and her first collaborations with the Institute of Astronomy at the National Autonomous University of Mexico. We then unpack what went into the public space art intervention she called Desire, where she built an artificial comet that flew in the evening sky above Mexico City in 2016. We then explore how she navigates the challenges as an artist engaging with the scientific lab through her experience of working at the European Council for Nuclear Research, CERN, where she has had two residencies. We then look at her collaborative project with six other artists called Matters of Gravity, where they explored the different implications of zero gravity using the facilities at Star City in the Yuri Gagarin Cosmonaut Training Center outside Moscow. Finally, we discuss the lessons that Ale has drawn from her extensive engagement with scientists working in a wide variety of disciplines, and how she's going about her project entitled It Is Going to Rain with a Quantum Studio Project in Johannesburg. Useful links to Ale's project website and other information can be found in the show notes for this podcast. Ale, welcome to Johannesburg on the Quantum Studio Project, which we'll be talking about in this podcast. But my first question is really on your background and how did you come to art?
That's a tricky question. I think I was always there. But when I went to study to university in Mexico, the university I wanted to go was on a strike. So there was no art school that I could go. And I subscribed myself for the exam in another university, and I subscribed myself for sociology. And then when I was walking away from subscribing, it was a time without computers, so you have to go to a lady and tell this is and this. Then when I was going out, I passed through the workshops of industrial design. And I asked, what are you doing here? Industrial design, what is that? And then I went back and said, like, you know, I have just surprised myself. I want to erase it and I want to go to industrial design. They look at me like if I didn't know about what I wanted in life. But it was so good that I studied industrial design because I learned about processes and materials and a way to approach any problem when you were creating. So I stayed there, and then I went to specialize in textiles, and I started as a textile artist just because I was doing something. I never worked as an industrial designer, and then I realized that I wanted to do like techniques more smaller, so I went to jewelry and goldsmith, and my teacher was having a studio in a sailboat, so I said I went to build myself a sailboat, so I went to study boat building, and I always did art, so it was always there.
That's fascinating. Let's go straight into your engagement with science as an artist, and a project that has really blown me away is the project Desire, which is where you created an artificial comet that actually flew above the skies of Mexico City. So can you talk about that project in relation to your interest in engaging with technologies and science as an artist?
Before that project, I was already working with the skies and with some subjects about the universe, and I was collaborating with the Institute of Astronomy at the University UNAM in Mexico. So the curator that invited me, this was kind of a biennale, what that was happening in Mexico, about intervention in public spaces. And the project itself was that the interventions, the art interventions, were not announced. So you will have a public space in Mexico City, and the curator said which space, and then something should happen. It could be from performance happening, whatever you want to do, and then that's the project. Her name is Jessica Berlanga, and she invited me, and she told me your public space is the sky. And then it started everything, like all the questions. So how far is the sky? How wide is the sky? The sky limit is the Earth or beyond? And what happens in the sky? So I tried to approach the project in many different ways. Through history of what happened in the sky of the Valley of Mexico, it's important how it announced the Moctezuma that the Spaniards were coming, or the end of the Aztec Empire was going to happen, no? When he saw a comet. So then I started to work on also like, okay, how can I reach the sky to make an intervention? And there are things that happen in the sky, but there are also law that it's involved in the sky as a public space. You cannot drop anything from space, from the sky. So if something is dropped and it touched the earth, it's illegal. You cannot fly anywhere. There are a lot of laws that happen. It's worse than a public space on Earth. So it was also trying to find out what can happen there. We created with the curator a residency. It was in Tultepec, where the whole town is dedicated to create pyrotechnics. And they do it in a very handcraft way, like traditional way. And actually, when we were working there, it was amazing because I was learning to make the pyrotechnia and the black powder and all the effects and with everything. And you can see that someone far away were doing some testing of some pyrotechnic, and you can see the fireworks. And the people that was teaching me, they were asking each other, like, who is that? Oh, that must be Lucio. Yes, Lucio can get that dress. It's because they have like signature. So you can really create the colors and create like how long it would last. When it lasts the firework, it will change of color. So it was really involving in how to design a firework that could look like something astronomical. So the first part of the project was just to create the black powder and the bombs to throw them to the sky. And what is amazing is like 90% of a bomb, of a shell that you send like for a higher work, 90% is the amount of force that you need to push it to there like a rocket. And it's only 10% of the black powder that explodes there. So then we did like design some of the fireworks and then just lay down and have like the pyrotechnics engineers, okay, give me a big bang, give me a stars or a galaxy. And I was taking pictures, Polaroid pictures, and I can see like fragments of the universe. For me, it was like every time you do a firework, it's like we are reproducing the big bang, like telling the universe that here we are and we know that you existed, not like, no. And then I realized that we need a lot of black powder to pull to enough height that many people can see it. Because if we throw here, where we are now recording, like a firework, maybe in 10 kilometers they will not see it because it's very low, the height. So I thought, why don't we send him from the top of the sky? That's when a helicopter comes in. How if I throw them from a helicopter and we can fly around the city? And then there are the law. You cannot carry explosives in a helicopter. But I have a great producer. And she's like, let's look at the law, let's something. And you need to be 30 meters away to make an explosion of fireworks. That's for law in Mexico City. And you cannot put the explosives inside of the helicopter, but you can hang them. So I designed this kind of nucleus, I call it, that is full of fireworks that I design in different colors, but tones more like white and yellow and oranges and kind of the colors that we see the universe and different lastings and how it's going to behave, the pyrotechnics on the sky, and create like kind of a score of the comet, of how it's going to be. The nucleus, just imagine, it's like a half a sphere that is hanging from the helicopter. It's full of fireworks. It was half a ton of black powder. But each firework, it's only like enough black powder to just push it and be released. And it was almost everything. 95% of the black powder was the firework. So then we plan it. And actually, the first day that we decided, it was it's called the First Desire, because the Biennale was Proyecto Líquido Deseo, that is like liquid project desire, that it means like that's this liquid form of entering the public space through the artwork. So it was going to be the first artwork that happened. That's why we call it from that. And also because I think that the first wish or the first desire consciously happened, we created it while we were looking at the sky. And maybe it was the rain or maybe it was the wonder, but the first question came at looking at the sky. So then we planned it, but it was a storm. It was electric storm. And I think it's not safe being in a helicopter with explosives in an electric storm. So we have to cancel it and put it on pause. And then it's like, when will be a good date if it's not going to be the first one? And I decided that it was going to be near December, that there were not more storms. But also it's close to a moment when we have the festivities of Virgen de Guadalupe. Virgen de Guadalupe appeared in the time of the Spaniards in Mexico. And the story tells that she appeared to a native. But that one was an astronomer. And it's all written in a lot of texts of how it appears with the shooting stars. So I decided it was a good day to find it on that time. So then it happened. We crossed the city without announcement. It was in the time of the sunset. So we can have like low light first, and then we can have like the darkness. It flied across Mexico City about for 40 minutes. And I enjoyed it so much. It was like, wow. The pilot told me that he had ever fly above the stars, above the comet. No, he had flied below it, but not above. No, see.
And you had that wonderful phrase that it was a moment when everybody was standing together and looking up at the sky at this amazing sight.
Yeah, for me, that was more the conceptual part of how I put in context the project of making an intervention to Mexico City. In that time, we had elections, and the elections were coming, and people were really fighting, even inside families, like, you know, politics that divides, no, the people. So it was like, when we look at the moon, we always said, like, we keep on, even we send the message to, have you seen the moon? No, it's like, go look at the moon, no, it's like something happens in the sky, something that we will turn our sight to look at it, a rainbow or beautiful sunset or whatever. So in some way, if that happens, we'll join our sights in the same direction. And that's what I was aiming to have like a moment where we join our sights in the same direction.
Ale, let's move more specifically into your engagements with science and science labs. And I think for us here in South Africa, we're particularly struggling with the moment or the first engagement between an artist in a science lab. And maybe you can reflect on your experiences working at the CERN Institute in Europe and the experience of going into such a vast lab, having to engage with scientists who are very busy, and how you manage that, and the kind of work that you developed. I'm thinking of your Finding the Center project.
I will go backwards a little bit, just to how I was prepared to go to CERN, because I had worked before with the Astronomy Institute. The first time I entered there, we had a meeting between three artists and three scientists, three astronomers, and the curator of the project was aiming to, like, we show a little bit of our work. 5 minutes, each of us. And the scientists show, and for us, we saw, like, they show something, and it was like, okay, interesting, I don't understand. And one of the scientists, she show an image. And the other astronomers were, whoa! Where would you take it? And I could see like nothing in the image. It was just like lines, no? And when we were showing our work, we were between each other. The artist like, wow, that's so great, no? And they were like, what is that, no? So then we realized that we have to bond in another way, not through our own disciplines. So we decided to make a meal and join together and bond in a way that it was more human. So I knew that need to happen at CERN. It's a place that is overwhelming. 6,000 people or more work there from every nation, religious background, everything. And they are working together in something that seems so away from common people and so important at the same time. And it's this big machine that they construct that I think this is the biggest technology that human beings have created. And when they create like the hottest moment in the universe that is just like the collision, and they can create an emptiness, a void, where they accelerate the particles, that is the emptiness more empty than the space between planets in our solar system, something like that, they say. So everything you learn there is overwhelming. No, so it's like, what can I do here? And with these minds that understand things that I don't. Even before going, what I do is like I took a very quick course. I went to the physics department of the university and asked them, can you keep like a nuclear physics course for me? Just like an intensive one, just to prepare myself not to arrive to CERN to ask what is a proton. No, like I really need to be prepared. And they designed a course of physics for artists. We were five there taking the course, and it was amazing. And even for the teacher, because he said, like, I never had so interested and amazed, no, like when they were talking about the muons, like how a muon, that is a subatomical particle, how a muon behave, we were like, wow, I want to be a muon, no? And they're like really interested. And can I take a picture of the blackboard? The class was going to be 2 hours. It started at 8 at 9. That was the time they gave me. We stay up till midnight. We prolong every class because we were really like tourists in a place that we don't know. Tourists in the pyramids in Mexico saying like, wow, picture. So when I arrived there, I have like a little bit of a background. I felt more prepared. And one of the scientists explained me how the ring where they accelerate has this magnetic field, because it's through the magnetic field that they can accelerate, through the magnets, that they accelerate the particles. So the reason why it's down underground, that is more than 100 meters underground, and that it has to be protected by a lot of cement and also the distance. It's because the magnetic field they need to create this will create a lot of radiation or some things that will affect us. So if there has not this protection, and if it was not so below, also that's for another reason, stability and other things, the only safe place is the center, where singularity and infinity, it happens. So he make all this drawing in the whiteboard what he was playing, and said, so where is the center at CERN? And he said, like, I don't know, it should be in Switzerland or France, no? But it's somewhere. So I decided to ask the scientists. And through the arts department, we sent an email to all the community from the arts department to ask about where is the center of CERN, that I'm looking for that, and I was willing to invite some scientists to collaborate with me. Most of them didn't answer. Some of them were like caught by the question, and they will answer like, which center? The geometrical? The gravitational? The center of information? No, which center you want? So there are a lot of centers, no? And they were fighting. Some of them, they told me after that they read the question and then they pulled down the email. And then after they were saying like, oh, this scientist, he said the center is at his house. Maybe it's not. And they were caught by the question. So I had a lot of different scientists that work with me. One was the metrologist, that they measure everything, that they have a main metrologist, and they have, at CERN, it's very interesting. They have these kind of GPS coordinates of everything of the machine. Like every screw have its coordinates. They are the CERN coordinates. So if you're going to change something like a cable, you will be able to know which one and don't commit a mistake that could be fatal. No. So then I work with him and we decide, okay, we will take about for the ring, which is the center, and also we will make it from the points of detection, no, of the collisions. We make it in different ways, and CERN is a little bit tilted, 2 degrees tilted, because of the construction things on the ground. So then the center should be like the projection of that. Where's the projection of it? And we find some coordinates, we went to look at it, and we make kind of a procession to go to look at the center. And it's in a field. It's a field, and later we knew that the field belongs to CERN, and they rent it to a farm, and they just have like corn or wheat or something. And what was beautiful is that almost every scientist wanted to stand up there and just like raise their arms and say, I'm at the center, no? So it was a beautiful process of going to look for the center. And the other amazing thing is that the center is not fixed, because when they start testing CERN, the acceleration, they realize that every moon, the energy of the proton will go a little bit lower. And the reason why is because the ring increases its size with gravity in certain position of the moon. So when that happens, it will increase almost 1 millimeter in this almost 27 kilometer circumference. And that 1 millimeter is 1 millimeter more of trajectory that the proton has to pass through. But that means that the ring increases, but not completely on the same direction. It's not from the center. It depends on where the moon is. So more there, more there, more there. So the center will move around and rotate in a 20 centimeter area.
Okay, and I can see why that must have delighted you, because throughout your work, you've been fascinated by these correspondences and coincidences between the cosmic and the terrestrial. It runs through all of your work that I've looked at. From that CERN experience, certainly what I've found with residencies is the difficulty the artist often faces is the scientists in the lab all have their own schedules. They're under a lot of pressure to produce work. Deadlines have to be met. How have you as an artist working in a lab, maybe specifically with CERN, let's stay with that. You've had 2 residencies at CERN and you have a third one, I believe, coming up in the future. How have you dealt with that aspect of working with scientists and their very busy schedules and the demands that they're facing as scientists.
We need scientists that are open to open a space for us. Also, the CERN residency was kind of self-made because I won the honorary mention of the Collide at CERN. It was the second time that they opened the call for artists. And I won the honorary mention, and I was like upset that what I wanted was the residency to do. But anyway, they invite me. And what I found is the scientists that were part of the jurors, they were interested to work, and we met. And then I started to make the project. And the good thing is, okay, they didn't give me the money to produce, but I can have like the, I call all the process of learning and visiting. And then what I did is I engaged with these scientists that were willing to work with me so we can follow a conversation, and we are still on conversation. So it's not like the only way that you can enter a place to work with some science lab. Sometimes it's the open calls, but sometimes it's you have to make it yourself. And what I did is I opened it for me. I have to find the funding, obviously, to make what I did, but actually looking for the center was not really in need for a lot of funding. But when you have already engaged with a scientist, it's more easy because you have an institution that supports you. And that happened with me at CERN in a way that I could be able to keep on working. And that's why I was able to go back, and I will go back.
Let's look at a very different kind of project, and you've done several of this sort where you've actually organized artists to go into a scientific space and use it for, if I can say, quite flagrantly artistic and playful purposes. And I'm thinking of that incredible project that you did in zero gravity with the artists fighting over the pinata in the Russian zero gravity plane. And that involved, I know, tremendous demands in terms of fundraising, managing the funding. Can you talk us through that project and what was involved and how you managed to deal with it?
Yes, that was a huge project. And I promised after that I was not going to create anything else in my life, but I did. Yes. That project started, we built it together. A colleague of mine, Naum is his name. He's an artist. He lives in Berlin right now. And between the two of us, we decided, okay, let's do this project. We want to do this. I was already researching black holes and how time behaves in black holes. And when I realized that we can do this, no, it's like, okay, I want to research time in zero gravity. So the project started, okay, if we are going to try to do parabolic flights, that's how cosmonauts and astronauts are trained. And a parabolic flight, just a quick explanation of what it is this kind of airplane that is not a common airplane. It's not. They have an airplane that have a special engineer in their motor so they can pull them off and the oil will go in some way that is not affected by gravity. So the airplane will go up, and suddenly makes a kind of a parabola and let itself goes free fall. So you are falling in a plane and you are falling inside a plane as like the explanation of when you don't feel gravity because you are in free fall and there is not a resistance of the air. Because actually you are in zero gravity when you are in a parachute, but you will feel the air. So that's how it's been reproduced, zero gravity. So we decide like if we are going to do this, we should invite more artists and make a big project of it so it can be easy, also more easier to find the funding and to create something. So we invite 7 other artists that have worked already something between art and science or have worked with things of the sky or have a different approach to the process. And we invited a scientist, a theoretical scientist of gravity that happened to be the director of nuclear physics in nuclear sciences in the university. We knocked the door and we asked him that we wanted to have this project, that we were willing to do this. Actually, he said afterwards that he never thought that we could be able to do that. But he said, yes, welcome, come in. And we asked for gravity lessons. We went through the process of how gravity forces have changed in history with the new knowledge of sciences. We approach it in a philosophical way, what gravity means on history from the Greeks to today, how we use it in language. So in different approaches, and we have a space agency in Mexico. We approach to them, but we don't have facilities. But we have amusement parks, and amusement parks use gravity. So we didn't know if we were going to be able to make it to Russia, to Moscow, star cities where they have these training airplanes. We wanted to do it with Russia because it's the place where they have the biggest kind of airplane for the training. Because there are places in the United States that's closer, it's cheaper, but there are smaller planes, and even as a tourist you can go. And it's a lot of money. I think it would have been more expensive there than going to Russia because we create this like a collaboration. So for me, it was like really an experience of how you write to an institution in another country that you don't know the culture, you don't know anything. So all the process to write to them, we approach the embassy, a lot of things that we didn't knew how to do it. But it's this not knowing that makes you easy to approach. I don't know if I'm doing right or not, but I'm going to knock the door. And that gives us the way to approach it. So then we took all these lessons. We didn't know if the outcome will come only from the amusement park, but it was have to do a research of the subject of gravity through the artistic point of view. Because gravity is still a question today. Like, we know how it behaves. It's not a force, but it is. It behaves like this. It's a quality of the curvature of the space and time. But it's really still a problem for physics that we have to find out. So it's how we approach it. And it was amazing, like most of the works of the artist approach it in a different question of gravity. For example, Naum's project was about affection and about what happened with affection and love in zero gravity. And if you live in the International Space Station and you see the images, now today you can see more, but at that time it was 10 years ago. You don't see a lot of images of astronauts embracing. There was no touching. Why they don't, no? And one of the problems, if we are going to inhabitate Mars or the moon in the future, is that it's not so easy to have sex there because you need gravity. So he was researching that subject. And he asked all of us during, we did 10 parabolas. So in 8 of the parabolas, we can do our experiments. Each artist do something in the plane, but that we did too collaborative. But he asked us to spend one of our parabolas for our experiments to work with him, to each of the artists. So 2 artists will, during the parabola, will come up and try to embrace. And then it's filmed. And when it was my turn with Ivan Puig, another artist, when we were in zero gravity and tried to embrace, it doesn't felt like an embrace, like a hug. It felt like I was trying to hold myself to him, no? And at the moment that I hold, it's like pushing it and you're twisting and then you're spinning around and then you're just holding to each other, try to make an embracing, and it's not an embrace. And sometimes that's how we embrace here on Earth, trying to hold from someone else and not doing an embrace. So we realize that that won't happen, and that's something that we would miss. Also, for example, Tania Candiani's artwork was to reproduce a machine that was done in this 170-something to try to fly, that when you see the machine, you will look at it and say, like, no one will fly on that machine, and I wouldn't jump like a step with that machine. But in that days, we didn't know. And what she did is she reproduced the machine and she really fly in the machine. It's like, okay, the machine was not a bad design, but it was the wrong gravity to fly, no? So it was these different approaches. And another artist, what he did, he was doing other experiments, but in one each parabola, he had like a fixed camera with a weight and a book on top. And it's like how the book in zero gravity keeps less wait, which books? That's the piece. So every time it was a different book that leads us to today, how we have built humanity. So it has from Marx to the Bible to whatever you can imagine.
And the different books responded differently.
All of them lost completely their weight, no? But they start with certain weight. And the question was, what are we are going to take? What can we take with us? Are we are going to lose all this ideology that we have? And some of them we should.
And your project? This was the piñata.
Yes. Well, my main project was the hourglass, how it loses the weight and how it kind of time pauses, but it's not a complete pause. It dances inside and maybe go flow from one place to another. No? And the other one was to create this piñata, like it was the final project in Zero Gravity that was to create this piñata. That a piñata, the original piñata in Mexico, it comes from the time of the colonial times, when they were evangelizing to the natives and making these Catholics. So we have a pastorela thing. It's in December and you have the piñata and all the goods are inside. It was fruits and sweets. And the piñata should have like 7 peaks and it represents each of the capital sins. Lust and lie and envy and blah, blah, blah. So when you break it as if it's a demon, everything will fall down and you pick the goods. So here the piñata will break down and will spread the goods all around. As a supernova, when a supernova explodes, all the different elements that created life came to us. It produces all the elements, like even gold and silver, like almost all the elements in the universe. And in a piñata on Earth, when it breaks and all the goods go down, you commit the 7 sins down there, no? Because you're in top of someone else, and then you say, this is mine, and you have envy, and you take the candies of someone else or something.
We have them at children's parties, and that's exactly what happens.
Yes, and they fight, and they are not happy, and someone cries, and it's terrible. But here, everything was going to fly out. It was going to be a democratic piñata. But then no one told us, no one realizes that it won't happen on Zero Gravity. As we cannot hold to each other because we push each other, you cannot break a piñata. You cannot hit anyone in Zero Gravity. If you try to hit someone, you will push them. And that's what happened with the piñata. It only pushed. And the captain that was the one that was supposed to break the piñata, the Russian, he hit it. He was so mad that he couldn't break it and try to hit it again and hit it again. And fortunately, the top of the piñata was open and all the candies came out and we have everything around. And even there was confetti and that confetti, I think, is still there in the airplane. And then after Zero Gravity, they break it.
And to our listeners, we will be providing links in the show notes to where you can get some experience of these really amazing projects. And these have just been a couple of the projects that you've been involved with in a long and very productive career. What for you have been the big lessons about engagements between artists, scientists, labs, or scientific expeditions in terms of the kind of attitudes, the possibilities of new knowledge?
The first one is openness to learn and also to share. Because the feeling that when you enter to a lab also is like you are getting fed about everything, no? And sometimes it's not equal, that relation, because then, for example, a scientist or whatever discipline comes from, it's like you're taking from them, but you are not giving them. There should be like an exchange. So there's something that you can also give them. It can be conceptual knowledge, something, but because they are not in our world also, and it's a complete different world for them. So the sharing is important. The other thing it really is about human connection. I can work with some scientists because I know I can be friends with them. So it's like when you meet someone and you know that, yes, I really want to have a coffee again with that person because we chat so good or something. It's the same thing. I think for us to collaborate, it's needed also the human connection, because the professional combination of disciplines like art and science is not clear for anyone. So we have to be clear in something else, even the outcome, we don't know what it's going to be. I think science goes from A to B. In art, we can go from A to purple, but not even a letter, not something else. So for me, what I have learned is that first it has to be a human connection, and then the openness, and specifically what I am working here is about the metaphors. And it's about how we understand each other, because we use different languages, even we are speaking the same language. The meaning of the words that we use and how we use them are completely different. We're meaning something different. If I say an organic process, it's completely different for me as an artist to say what is an organic process. An artist will understand me. But say the same thing to a chemist, it's completely a different thing. And that's a simple example.
And often when one engages in a working relationship with scientists, their expectation is that the artists are going to help popularize the science. Certainly here in South Africa, that's the most common starting point.
Yes, and I think all processes of art and science collaboration started there. And that's why the scientists think like they can use art to communicate science. But I think we have to surpass it. For example, the scientists in the Matters of Gravity project, when we arrived to the institute, most of the scientists and the physicists there were saying, and what they are going to do? They want to paint atoms? No. They really didn't understand what was our interest approaching there, because they don't know what can come from the conceptual part. I think the sharing of the knowledge, and then how you can use that knowledge not to represent it, but as part of your creative process. And I think that's what we are aiming, for example, in this residency. It's not about a representation of the science, but it's about how these concepts and this having a world image or an approach to a different reality, how you perceive the world can be used in your creative process to build something different.
So you've mentioned the project that you're busy with now, which is the Goethe Institute Quantum Studio Project, which is, for our listeners, it's an international project. It's placing artists in different labs around the world. And in fact, from South Africa, young, very talented new media artist Natalie Penang is now, as we speak, in the Netherlands, working there with the lab. And Ali, of course, has come over from Mexico here to Johannesburg. So, Ali, how specifically are you approaching this project in Johannesburg, which is around quantum technologies, and specifically has the title, Is It Going to Rain?
Actually, the original title is Cloud at Quantum. That's how I apply, but It's Going to Rain, it's now the project title. The idea of how to approach it. First, I wanted to understand quantum, and you know, Richard Feynman said that nobody can understand really what's happening there. And what I found very interesting in this process, it's more like hands-on project has been more up to now that we have had a month of the residency. It's more the conceptual part and trying to understand what is going on in this quantum physics, in this size, and what they are doing with it is interesting, but I need to go backwards to what is it, how it behaves, because quantum have led us these discoveries since they appear and all the spooky things that says Einstein that happened, like the entanglement and all these things, led us to very wrong metaphors of what quantum is. And what I want to work with is with these metaphors that we created, or how can I create a different metaphor to explain this? You know, you need something that you know to create a metaphor. But if you don't understand, and this world behaves so differently to the material world we are used to, that any metaphor that comes from this material world will be wrong and would mislead us to a different understanding. And that's what happened with art and science collaboration. So in this project, what I am aiming is to work in this way of how this clouded thing make us not really be able to predict if it's going to rain or not, because the metaphor is unknown. It goes from there. That's how I'm approaching it.
Right. So it sounds like it's still very early.
Yes, still very early. There are some kind of things that I have worked already, sketches and things. And basically, I know that what is going to happen here when I'm going to present here before the end of the residency, just before I leave, it's going to be just like a short glimpse, or let's say kind of a trailer, no, of what it's going to be. Because I think that really these processes takes time sometimes to settle the idea, to understand what you're working on and to create the final project. But that's what happened with the residencies. You have to have an outcome. So the outcome is like the first sketch of something else that will happen. I think I'm really going to go deeper in this.
How would you, after this trailer here in Johannesburg, how do you see yourself taking that thinking further? Would you be looking for another residency? How would you keep the process, the exploratory process, alive and develop it?
Fortunately, I know some physicists already that I will ask them to do a companion with me. But also, thanks to technology today, it can be on distance, no? It's like to keep on having some feedback with the people that I started to work here. But I still don't know. And that's exciting.
Ella, that's a great point to end on. As I said to our listeners, we will be providing links because I think you need to look at the work that Ella's just been discussing to appreciate just how astounding many of these pieces are. And of course, there's lots more work that Ella's been busy with over the last two decades. And certainly they are very, very worth exploring as well. I think particularly your engagement with oceans and travel and navigation, which I think are absolutely fascinating. So, Ella, good luck with the rest of this stage of the residency and your thinking here in Johannesburg. And we look forward to you presenting the initial results in mid-August. So everybody, please keep an eye out for announcements about that. That should be a really interesting stage in this artistic research. Ella, thank you very much.
No, thank you, Christoph.
You've been listening to a dialogue between myself, Christoph Doherty, the Chair of Research in the Witt School of Arts, and my guest, the Mexican independent artist researcher, Ella de la Puente. This podcast was hosted and produced by myself, with technical production by Elna Schutz. The music for this podcast was composed and performed by Lee Rosevere and is used under a Creative Commons license.